So we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 17, and we'll be reading verses 214 through to 217, which we'll chant together. Okay, so I'll just read the preceding verses, and then we'll read 217 together. Okay. Translation. After hearing their complaints in sweet words, I told them, please go back home. I shall certainly prohibit Nimai Pandit from continuing his Hare Krishna movement. This is Chandkazi. Text number 215. Translation. I know that Narayan is the supreme god of the Hindus, and I think that you are the same Narayan. This I feel within my mind. Text 216. After hearing the Kazi speak so nicely, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu touched him and smilingly spoke as follows. Okay, translation in purple by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The chanting of the holy name of Krishna from your mouth has performed a wonder. It has nullified the reactions of all your sinful activities. Now you have become supremely pure. Purple. Confirming the potency of the Sankirtan movement, these words from the very mouth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu express how people can be purified simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Krishna. The Kazi was a Mahabodhan Malekcha, or meat eater, but because he several times uttered the holy name of Lord Krishna, automatically the reactions of his sinful life were vanquished, and he was fully purified of all material contamination. We do not know why the Pashandis of the present day protest that we are deteriorating the Hindu religion by spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world and claiming all classes of men to the highest standard of Vaishnavism. But these rascals disagree with us so vehemently that some of them do not allow European and American Vaishnavas to enter into the temples of Vishnu, thinking religion to be meant for material benefit. These so-called Hindus have actually become vicious by worshipping the numerous forms of the demigods. In the next verse, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirms the Kazi's purification. Interesting. Okay. So please repeat after me, the chanting of the holy name of Krishna from your mouth has performed a wonder. It has nullified the reactions of all your sinful activities. Now you have become supremely pure. Magyanatam randasya gyananjana shalakaya Chakshu militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya mano bishtam stapitam yena bhutale. Swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantikam. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta padakamalam. Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Sri rupam sagujatam sahagana raganatam vitam tvam sijivam. Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagna Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha kalpaturubhyascha kripa sindubhyeva cha paditanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So begging the blessings of all the devotees so we can somehow find some words to speak on this particular verse in purple. So I was looking at this verse in preparation for the class, And Krishna brought this very much to life. So I was yesterday in central London, in one of our centers, in one of our restaurants, and I was taking prasadam. And there was some people sitting at the table next to me taking prasadam. And I was enjoying my prasadam, right? And I was just dressed, you know, normally, so I wasn't dressed in devotional attire. I call it in UCB mode, right? You know that term, UCB? It means undercover brother, right? I was just dressed normally. So the people next to me, they didn't know I was practicing, trying to be a devotee. So there was an interesting conversation that they were having. And in the conversation, one of them was telling the other, he was talking about Prabhupada. He was talking, he said, I read this Bhagavad Gita as it is, that the Hare Krishnas have. And he said, I couldn't get into it. And he was saying, he said, you know what I found out later on? He said that in their purpose, it's not actually what Prabhupada said. That's what he said. He said, actually, it was put in there by their Western, by his Western followers. And of course, I was feeling a little bit... Okay. I was having my paneer sabji, you know, just interrupts the flow, right? A bit hold under the collar, but okay, just breathe. So I finished my paneer sabji. It's completely disrupted. Went and washed my hands, and I thought, I'm going to have to say something. So I came back to them. I said, excuse me, gentlemen. I could not help overhearing the conversation. And I explained to them, I said, actually, you know, those purports, Prabhupada actually spoke them, right? So they're directly the dictation of the founder Acharya. They didn't like that, right? They weren't happy with that. But we continued anyway, right? So then I went on further to explain the view, because one of the things that they said was that they were saying that Prabhupada didn't actually say that Shiva is a demigod. No, they said, no, he did say she was a demigod. I said, I've heard him say she was a demigod. So in fact, there are classes where you can hear Prabhupada giving a lecture directly saying that Shiva is a demigod. They didn't like that either. It was just going downhill for some strange reason. Anyway, and then they were saying, the reason you can't understand is that you're from the Abrahamic traditions. Right? Yeah, that was the point. And I realized at this point that they couldn't hear. Actually, what happened? Well, I took the person's email address. I said, I will send you a link to a class where Prabhupada directly says that Shiva is a demigod. But it got me thinking about one of the points that's made up in this particular, or that Prabhupada brings out in this purport. And it's also, it's a continuation of the point that comes out in the verse itself. The understanding that the person has about this tradition is not based upon just reading the books, right? It is more than that. It is actually the purification that one has accrued. Right? It is by purification that everything is understood. So therefore, many people read the books. But the reactions of what they read is completely varied. Yeah? Because the entering into the mystery of Krishna consciousness is actually the descent of divine grace. In this purport, Lord Chaitanya is actually speaking this particular verse. The Kazi has been speaking so many things. In the previous verses running up, the Kazi is recounting his encounter with Lord Nrisimhadev. Okay? And he's speaking directly to Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya is pleased with what he is actually saying. And he's explaining that the chanting of the holy name of Krishna from your mouth has nullified the reactions to all of your sinful reactions. Huh? Now you have become supremely pure. Not pure, supremely pure. So this revelation is actually the symptom, the lakshana, it's the fruit, the phal, of the purification that comes from the Chandkazi uttering the names of the Lord. Now in this purport, Prabhupada begins by talking about this confirmation. Because if you want to have faith in something, you need to see that it works. Okay? I was going to write an article. And I was going to, in the article, I was going to talk about what we call baselining. You see, because in many cases, people can look at Krishna consciousness or any religious process, and they may say, they do say, many people who are atheistic, they do say, look at this religious person, right? Or look at these religious people. And there will always be a small sample of religious people that they'll point to, and they'll say, look how poorly their behavior is. Just look how poorly their behavior is, right? They're hypocrites. It means, obviously, this religious stuff is a load of nonsense. No. What they don't understand is what we call the baseline. The baseline means the starting point. If it's just like an education. There are some really good schools, and I mean really good schools, and they have brilliant teachers, and yet when you see the results that the students get, the results are not very high. Now, on a superficial level, you then look and you think that means that the school is poor, the teachers are poor. Wrong conception. Right? It means that you're not looking at the situation properly. The proper way to look at it is, what was the level of the students when they came into the school? Right? What's the baseline? What's their starting point? Then when you measure from what they were when they came into what they are now, you see something very fantastic. They've traveled a very far distance. That means that the teachers were absolutely incredible. But actually, the starting point may have been quite low. So in a similar vein, when you want to understand the potency of something, you have to understand the initial state. Right? You have to have that vision. Because when you can see where something is compared to where it should be, then you think, wow, this is absolutely incredible. In the purple, Prabhupada talks about the idea of the meat eater, right? So this idea, this person was prepared to completely stop the Sankirtan movement. Now he's speaking directly to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Directly. Right? He's speaking words of recognition, and Lord Chaitanya is actually pleased with this particular person. He's come a long way in a relatively short period of time. That means that whatever name that this person is chanted to come to this stage, it is extremely powerful. Therefore, Prabhupada begins this purport, confirming the potency of the Sankirtan movement. These words from the very mouth of Lord Chaitanya express how people can be purified simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Krishna. We deal with the invisible, right? You sometimes look at the world state and say, oh, it's really, really bad. But do you know how much worse it should have been? Right? That's the point. So when Prabhupada talks about the movement, one of the things he said that, the Sankirtan movement averted the Third World War. Now, we can read this as brushing as a sweeping statement, but actually think about what that actually means. Right? Probably none of us have ever been living in a wartime situation, right? You go out, you speak to your friends, you check things on the internet, you have your lassi and govindas, whatever it is. I'm sorry about the food references, it's just on my mind. Okay, but you get my point, okay? You have all of these different types of things. But what would it be like if Krishna consciousness wasn't there? What would you be like if this Krishna consciousness movement wasn't there? By understanding these things in more detail, you have far greater appreciation for what Prabhupada has given. And we'll take a few other angles to this as well. There are so many fine points to the Shastra. Here, in this purport, Prabhupada is talking about how, these rascals disagree with us so vehemently that some of them do not allow European and American Vaishnavas to enter into the temples of Vishnu. Interesting statement. It is a fact that many of the Western devotees in the previous life, they were Indian. It's a fact. It is a fact that many of the Indian devotees in the previous life, they may have been American or European. There's a very interesting pastime. One of Prabhupada's disciples was in Vrindavan. I believe it was a famous temple there. And the pujari, they saw this person in the Vaishnava attire. And they said to me, if you practice bhakti very nicely in the future life, you'll be able to take birth in India. He told Prabhupada what that person said. Prabhupada said to him, you go back and tell that person that if they worship the deity very, very sincerely, and if they're very fortunate in their next life, if they're very fortunate, they'll be able to take birth in the West and join the Hare Krishna movement. Interesting. If they're very lucky. And if they worship the deity very, very nicely. So what is this idea of birth? The situation that someone is born in, you know, it is talked about that someone who has some aspect of that pious birth, they may be born in a situation where there's wealth, there's fame, all these different opulences. I believe it's Kunti who speaks about the mother Kunti. But it's actually even more than that. There's a subtlety to it. The birth that someone has is a reaction of their previous piety. You understand? It is a reaction to a previous piety. Therefore, it doesn't actually mean that the person is pious now. You understand the difference? Therefore, you sometimes have people who've got material opulences and they're impious. You also see the opposite. You also see some people who have a very kind of difficult initial point, but they have very, very good character. So the dynamics of karma are such that you have a state, but you also have the subtlety of the movement from that state. Prabhupada explains this very nicely. He gives the story of the sage who was walking through the village. Rajaputra Chiranjeev Muniputra Majiv. The sage is walking through the village, and as he's walking through, he gives different statements to different individuals in that village. He sees the butcher. He says to the butcher, "You shouldn't live and you shouldn't die. Right? Don't live, don't die." He sees the brahmachari. He says, "You should die." Right? He sees the prince. He says to the prince, "You should live as long as you possibly can." And then he sees the pure devotee. He says to the pure devotee, "You can live or die, makes no difference." But he also explains why he said these things. So to the butcher, he said, "Don't live and don't die." He said, "Your life is hellish. You're just constantly killing animals. It's a very hellish state. And when you pass from this world, you're going to therefore go to hell. So don't live, don't die." He says to the prince, and this is very interesting, it relates to this purport, "You should live as long as possible." Now get this. That princely state means that the person is experiencing the reactions from their previous pious activities. But what is the prince doing with that piety? He's engaging in all types of sense gratification. So he says to him, "You need to live as long as possible, because when you pass away, you're going to have to pay for all this impiety that you're doing. Live as long as you can." He says to the brahmachari, "You should die, because the brahmachari is performing all these austerities. So what is coming to him will be very auspicious, very positive. So you should die. You've got all of this good stuff waiting for you, right? Either a heavenly birth, something higher, etc. And to the pure devotee, you can live or die. It makes no difference, right? Because right now, you are fully absorbed in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When you pass from this world, what are you going to do? You're going to go back to the spiritual world, fully absorbed in the service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can live, you can die. Makes no difference. So these are the dynamics, the subtleties. And you really do want to go deep into the Shastra and understand these things. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Antikale chamame vasmaram mutva kalevram ya prati samadbhavam yati nashasya samsayaha." Whatever someone thinks about at the time of birth, that also determines their beginning state, right? But it doesn't determine their end state. Their end state is actually determined by the consciousness. Right? What do we see? We see Bharat Maharaj. His attainment is at the level of what? Bhava Bhakti. But at the end of his life, his attachment becomes to what? A deer. So in his next life, because of the end state attachment, his beginning state in his next life is, he's born as what? He's born as a deer. Right? However, because of the consciousness that he attained in his previous life, does he have the consciousness that goes along with that deer's body? Yes or no? No. So there are actually these two factors. Right? The level of conscious realization, also the attachment, especially at the time of death. Prabhupada says that if a man becomes attached to a woman, in his next life he'll take birth in a female body. A woman who becomes attached to a man, in the next life she'll take birth in a male body. Huh? These are the subtle dynamics. Another principle on this is what we see in the pastimes of the Pandavas and the Kauravas. They're both born in a royal family. So they both have this reaction of previous piety, extraordinary piety, right? They both have that recognition of an association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, even though the beginning state is the same in one sense for both of them, the core of us are in reverse gear. Why? Because they're envious of the Lord. So that piety is just being destroyed. They're burning up those previous pious credits due to their envy of the Supreme Lord and his pure devotees. Whereas the Pandavas, because of the different mentality, they are just accruing more and more spirituality, more and more Krishna consciousness. Right? So with anything, you can go beneath the surface. And as you go beneath the surface, you'll be able to understand more and more and more and more and more. So we are carrying, even in this life, we're carrying some portion of the karma of many lifetimes. Not all of it. It doesn't necessarily all manifest in one lifetime. A certain portion of it will manifest in a particular life. But what the holy name does is so powerful. It can burn off practically lifetimes worth of karma, so you're only burning off what you need to burn off in this life to go back home, back to Godhead. If you see the invisible, then this can be appreciated. So considering billions of lifetimes have been there, billions of activities, billions of wandering within the material universe, to burn all of this off and just have something to burn off in one lifetime, it is actually an extraordinary achievement. It is actually an extraordinary achievement. And it requires someone to really think about and understand just how merciful our founder Acharya is. There was also a statement by Prabhupada, and he was telling some of his disciples from different places. He said that you took birth in the West specifically to help me to spread my mission. Very interesting. And that point is echoed by a statement by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. So they asked him, why is it sometimes Vaishnavas are born in difficult circumstances or situations? And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he explained that it is actually the Lord's blessing upon that particular grouping. Right? He says sometimes the Lord will allow a Vaishnava to take birth in different situations, because by taking birth in those different situations, those who are karmically associated with him or her, they will receive that blessing, that ability to know Krishna. And even if they don't take it up themselves, that person, by him or her taking it up, it will actually help to liberate so many other individuals who are connected with them. So there are so many different aspects of Krishna consciousness. Ultimately, the mission itself is extraordinary and is unstoppable. Yeah? The mission is actually heralded, and the mission is it is driven directly by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah? The Sankirtan mission is a mission which is so deep and so powerful that it can deliver each and every individual all over the world, because when you come in contact with the Supremely Pure, it is automatically the case that you become purified. Yeah? There's a subtlety to that also. And that is that, for example, when we're chanting, it's not that any type of chanting is equally purifying. Right? What we're looking for is chetodapa namarjanam. That means that when your mind comes in contact with the holy name, then the mind becomes purified strongly. When the mind isn't in contact, when the mind's wandering elsewhere, but the lips are saying something, the mind isn't getting the same degree of purification. So it's not just about quantity, it is also about quality. Our job is not to just engage in mechanical devotional service. Our job is actually to engage in mindful devotional service. If you want to feel an acceleration of your spiritual life, what those potent moments in devotional service is when your mind is in contact with the purifying process. Right? It's a mistake I make all the time, but it's very easy to sleepwalk in Krishna consciousness. We're going to be really honest. Sometimes we see, but so-and-so's been practicing for this long. How come they're still like that? That's one of the reasons. Right? That's one of the reasons. It'll be a very interesting experiment. You could first of all look at how long someone has been practicing Krishna consciousness. And then as a secondary thing, you can say, okay, this person's been practicing for 40 years. Okay, of those 40 years, how long has their mind, in other words, how long have they been at, if you bring together all the times during those 40 years where they were actually attentive. You get that point? Not just practicing, not just mechanically. Let's discount all the mechanical devotional service and look at the times where they were practicing it attentively. Attentively. That means the mind. Maya sakta mana pata. Krishna says, with the asakta mana, with the mind attached to me. Let's discount all the times where it was done mechanically and let's bring together the entire duration where the mind was actually attentively practicing. You would see something incredible. And that's why the devotional process has different effects upon different people, because it's both quality and quantity. So we have an extraordinary opportunity in this lifetime. But the onus is on us. It is very easy to lose some of your potency in devotional service. The easiest way to lose your potency in devotional service is to have a victim mentality. Like so-and-so did this, that person did that. Okay, there's a different way of looking at it. And this phrase is incredibly enriching. The other way you can look at it is, what's Krishna trying to tell me in this situation? You have a personal relationship with Krishna. And whether you know it or not, he's very hungry for a personal, a very deep and intimate dialogue with you. Right? If you just look back at your life and the circumstances that you're in, and if in a prayerful mood and in a mood of consultation with advanced devotees, you try to understand, what's Krishna trying to teach me here? Right? What's the lesson? What is it that I'm not getting? Right, that's the first point. And the second, how does he want me to react? The spiritual life becomes extraordinarily rich and dynamic. Extraordinarily rich and incredibly dynamic. And the way that you know it's working is, irrespective of what may or may not be happening outside, you feel a sense of inner abundance. Right? It's not a dryness. It's like, this is absolutely amazing. And you start to see how the Supreme Personality of God did. And when I say the Supreme Personality of God, I mean your Krishna. You understand? Because you have a personal relationship, he's your Krishna. Right? How your loving friend Krishna is trying to send you a message from the spiritual world. At the same time, we can also see another dynamic from this particular pastime. I'll be careful not to go over time because we want to make sure we have the ceremony. The Chandkasi, when Lord Nrisingadev actually revealed himself to the Chandkasi, as with most people, when they see Lord Nrisingadev, what's the first emotion that comes to mind? Fear, right? Extreme terror, I'd say. Okay? And that's putting it mildly. But that fear is incredibly useful. That fear is incredibly useful. There are many devotees in our movement who are stuck. What they've done, unconsciously, they've decided to settle in at a certain level in their spiritual life. Okay? And it will require a number of factors for that person to move on. Now, in many cases, some of that fear is based upon poor association. When one associates with the sadhus properly, or when one associates with the holy name properly, it is extremely potent for the following reason. When you're in the association of a pure devotee, they carry Krishna within their heart. When you chant the holy name properly, then more of Krishna is manifesting because he is the holy name. But there's also your receptivity. So when you're chanting properly, it makes you more receptive, and therefore more of the holy name is being exposed to you. Okay? Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gonita Guru Parampara Shri Prabhupada Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. So it's like a fire. Okay? So the presence of the pure devotee who has who's carrying Krishna in their heart is like a fire. But there's also your proximity to the fire. So there are different combinations that go on. There are some devotees, they have very powerful association. They themselves are not so receptive, but because the association is so powerful, even though they have little receptivity, they get a lot. Right? So it's like their receptivity is at 5%. But it's 5% of 100. Okay? As opposed to when they're associating with people who have a meager aspect of Krishna consciousness, then it becomes 5% of 5. You see the point? It's not their receptivity that's changed. But because they've got this degree of receptivity, but what they're associating with is extremely powerful, they still get a lot. You have others who are very receptive, but they don't have such quality association. They still get something, okay? But what you're looking for is a combination of both. You want to be highly receptive, and you want to, without being arrogant, you want to always try to take the best, the maximum concentration of Krishna consciousness that you can possibly get. Right? That's one factor. The second factor is this aspect of fear. There are two dynamics to fear. One can fear what's coming forward to them, okay? And therefore the stagnation, the self-doubt, the kind of reluctance to move forward. But there is another way of utilizing fear, which is demonstrated in this pastime, which is extraordinarily powerful. As devotees, it is incumbent upon each and every one of us from time to time to just take a moment and think, what's going to happen to you if you don't change? Right? If you look at yourself right now, and you look at the challenges, the anattas, the blocks, the things that you don't have a handle on in Krishna consciousness, one of the most liberating and powerful or moving things that you can do is just consider, what's going to happen to me if I don't change? What's going to happen to me if I go another year, 5 years, 10 years with the same attachments, anattas, ridiculous habits? And what you do when you take that stance is you take the fear that's blocking you from moving forward and you place the fear behind you, right? And by placing the fear behind you, you look back and you think, what's going to happen to me if I don't change? And that pulling the fear behind you, and you think, I don't want to be the devotee who 20 years from now is just embarrassed because I still criticize Vaishnavas, wrongly. Right, I still fall asleep when I'm chanting. Right, I still don't even understand the teachings. Right, I don't want to be that embarrassment. I look around and I see everyone that I know that they've moved forward very nicely, and I'm still stuck in this kind of mixed devotion. Right, I'm still stuck with these bad habits. So you can use the fear to move you forward. You can use the fear of staying the same stagnant individual. You can use that to powerfully motivate you. There is a caveat, right? You use it to the extent that it's inspiring, right? You use it to the extent that it's inspiring. Our two maxims, right? Smartavyam satatam Vishnu. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. So we accept what's favorable for devotional service. We reject what's unfavorable. And that also means the degree of things. Right? So a meditation is favorable to the degree that it inspires you to get out of bed, chant your rounds, chant them with quality, come to the temple, and even smile at that bhakta that you don't like. That's favorable. You know what I'm talking about, right? If it starts to de-energize you, it's unfavorable. I remember now there was one last point I wanted to share, then we'll go to questions and we'll finish at 8:25. So in here also, Prabhupada makes a very statement. We do not know why the Pashandis of the present day protest that we are deteriorating the Hindu religion. Now get this point very carefully. So The other aspect of this piety and having a pious situation, it is a curse, but it's a blessing and also a responsibility. And if the responsibility isn't dealt with properly, that blessing becomes a curse. It reverses its nature. I'll explain what I mean by this. So here we're talking about a Hindu birth. It's pious, right? We know that. It's pious. It's a result of previous piety, but it has certain connotations and certain responsibilities that come along with that. So, how does this work? So, if because of that piety, you're born in a situation where you hear something about Vedic culture and especially about Krishna from a young age, okay, you have that cultural exposure, let's say. Along with that, what tends to happen is the piety will also be present, or the previous piety will also be present in the children. Therefore, what that tends to mean, and this is for anyone who is either of birth where they come across Vedic culture or devotional birth even within this movement. It means that the children will have some previous piety. One manifestation of that is that they're going to be intelligent. Okay? So follow me through with this. So now you have intelligent next generation. And you yourself have exposure to Vedic or spiritual culture. So you're practicing it, but you may be practicing it from the scientific point of view where you understand why you're doing what you're doing, or you may be practicing it from the sentimental platform where it's just the thing that we all do. Your children are then going to ask you, Mom and Dad, why do we do this? Right? Because they're intelligent. They're going to expect you to know why you're doing what you're doing. And if you cannot consistently give them answers that make sense, there are two reactions. The first reaction is that your authority starts to diminish. Mummy doesn't know what she's talking. Mummy doesn't even understand why she does what she does. That's the first reaction. Second reaction is they begin to doubt the actual culture itself because they get no good answers. You understand? This is how you kill a culture. This is how you kill a culture. Then you take it a step further. In their socialization, they socialize increasingly with people who have overt or covert atheistic mindsets. And I say covert and overt, meaning that you can have even Hindu people, you can have even other religious people who have an atheistic mindset, right? They're religious in name only. Or they think that religion, as Prabhupada mentions here, they thinking religion is meant for material benefit. That is also an atheistic mindset. I think it's good for some of these people, right? You know, because I know, I've got my mate down the pub. I know that if he didn't believe in God, he'd be doing all this kind, he'd be getting drunk every night, all that kind of stuff. Right? So I think it's good because it does good for society, right? You know, I'm glad that you guys are religious because you probably have nothing to do, right? You know, you probably couldn't hold down a full-time job, right? You know, no offense. This kind of mentality. So it's still got these atheistic traces. So there needs to be an interface. You have intelligent people, they're going to ask intelligent questions about what we do and why. And if you can't answer, the religion starts to go down. You start to kill the culture. So it's incumbent upon all of us to know what we're doing and why we're doing it. Anyway, these are some thoughts. We literally have 2 minutes. I'm going to stop there, ask any questions before we end. Okay, so if there are no questions, we'll stop there. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Janita Gopremanandi, Hari Hari Bol. Okay.